You think we're simple, you think we're not bright. Look at your cities and ask yourself who's right. We've got country and you've got crime. We've got green and you've got grime. Let there be no doubt, we have what it takes to till the soil until our back aches. Just give us a break and don't be so rude. We love the work and you love the food.
We feed you.
Hello once again. I'm Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, bringing you episode 6 of Wheat All About It. I call today's episode Judy Olson, 30 Years of Leadership. It's possible a few of you don't know Olson, but she has been a mainstay of the Eastern Washington wheat industry since she was the first woman elected president of the Washington Association of Wheat Growers. Although other women have now followed in her footsteps in the state job, she remains the only woman who ascended to the top leadership post at the National Association of Wheat Growers. As I put this podcast together, I have listened to Olson's answers to my questions several times, and each time I have become more impressed by her grasp of the issues, as well as her wise counsel on how the wheat industry and farmers should address the challenges of the years ahead. This podcast is all Olson. She's well worth the 20 minutes. After 30 years in leadership posts in the wheat industry, politics in the federal government, the last 7 as state executive director of the Farm Service Agency, Judy Olson is retiring. I'd only been an agricultural reporter a few years when Olson's career in leadership took off, starting with her stint as the first woman president of the Washington Association of Wheat Growers, known as WAG, in 1990-1991. The first of anything always attracts news coverage, and being the first woman to lead the male-centric organization got a lot of press. Naturally, as the reporter for the Northwest Premier Agricultural Weekly, Capital Press, I was part of it. I drove to Judy and her husband Rich's wheat farm near Garfield to interview her. Afterwards, we walked into a nearby wheat field to take a photograph. Over a period of 10 minutes, I tried every trick in the book to animate Olson, but she was serious about her new position and serious in every photo. You can imagine my surprise then when a week later, the Spokesman Review, Spokane's daily newspaper, ran a story about Olson's new position with a photo of her in the same wheat field, but jumping up with her arms in the air and a big smile on her face. Later, when I asked her about it, Olson explained the spokesman photographer spent a half hour taking dozens of photographs that probably looked a lot like mine. Finally, the photographer said he was finished. Olson told me she was so happy the ordeal was over that she jumped for joy. Click. By the way, I put that spokesman photo on our Facebook page. Search for Wheat All About It. Over the years, I've interviewed Olson numerous times, but I don't ever recall asking what motivated the farm wife and mother to pursue a leadership post in the first place. Or if she did tell me, she wasn't as blunt about it as during one of her last days in the FSA office in late December.
Poor prices. I think that's what motivates most of the leaders in any part of agriculture, is either concern about regulation or prices, but mostly income to producers.
Wheat prices may have been her motivation, but it was good old-fashioned networking at a Whitman County Wheat Growers Association meeting and Kay Heron that set Olson on her 30-year career trajectory.
The first thing that happened is that I went to a county wheat grower meeting. My husband had gone with my dad and my brother and came home, and about the next month he says, well, wouldn't you like to go? There was so-and-so going to be a speaker. And I said, oh, it's just going to be a lot of men there. And he said, has that other ever stopped you before? And I said, no, so I went. And I came back as secretary treasurer of our county association. It's kind of what happens when you go to meetings sometimes. as Secretary Treasurer, I didn't know any of the acronyms. I didn't know anything about agricultural policy. But it was a really tough time during the 80s in agriculture all across the country and here in the Northwest. This was a period of the tractor parades and a lot of angst in agriculture. So I started going to the state wheat grower meetings with our county group simply because I needed to learn. And I met Kay Heron, Chris Heron and Dana Heron's mother. She was about the only other woman there besides staff. And she was adamant that the wheat growers needed to change their image from a hayseed in bib overalls to business people.
Was that successful, you think?
Well, I think it was very successful, particularly at the time. She kind of took me under her wing. I can't even remember the name of the committee that we were on at that time, but it was something to do with public relations and communications. And that was when we did our, shortly after that, a few years, was when we did our first state wheat grower meeting in Seattle. We moved it out of Spokane from time to time. And all of the officers always wore business suits or sport coats and ties to all of our meetings. The idea was to become professional and gain respect, not just among farmers who we represented, but business leaders and members of Congress and their staff.
Now, you were the first woman president of the Washington Association of Wheat Growers. What made you think that you could do the job in such a male-dominated culture?
Well, actually, I didn't think I could. I didn't really know. I got a call one night from Dana Heron shortly before the committee, or before the state meeting, asking me if I would accept the nomination. And he told me a little bit about being nominated to go through the line of officers. And I said, well, I'm not sure. And he says, well, I don't want you to talk about it to a lot of people, but you can talk to your husband about it and let me know. And so I called him back the next day and I said, well, if I'm nominated, I will accept the nomination. I just don't think that the organization is ready for a female leader. And I went to the convention. I didn't do any campaigning. I didn't even talk about it because I really didn't think that was going to happen. And there was no one in that room more surprised than I was when I was nominated and elected by unanimous consent.
As president of WAG, and then later when she entered a leadership role at the national level by becoming an officer on the National Association of Wheat Growers Board, I always assumed Olson was a Republican, like so many of her Eastern Washington farming contemporaries. I was wrong.
At the time you met me, I wasn't a Democrat. I was actually very bipartisan. I considered myself fully an independent. I considered myself fully an independent all the time I served as a wheat grower officer.
In what might be considered an irony, it was during Olson's stint as president of the National Association of Wheat Growers that she shifted her allegiance out of the nonpartisan column toward the Democratic Party.
I was national president the same time Senator Patty Murray was elected to the U.S. Senate. And there weren't very many women in the U.S. Senate. And of course, being in the wheat growers, my job was to call on the members of our delegation and other delegations from wheat producing states. And I met the senator. And of course, I had met her when she was in Olympia. And we renewed our acquaintance, worked closely with her staff. And we developed a relationship. So when I was jobless and I really wasn't looking for a job, and my predecessor in her office, her Eastern Washington director, passed away at a very young age unexpectedly, she came to me and asked me if I would like a job.
Olson served as Senator Murray's legislative director for 12 years. In August 2009, President Obama appointed her state FSA director. When I asked Olson what her biggest challenge was looking back over her 7 years at the helm of the organization, it wasn't an agricultural issue, she cited, but rather a budgetary one.
my biggest challenge was one I did not foresee. We've had many challenges, but I think the biggest challenge came from that period of time, and Congress still continues to do that, when they would not pass their appropriations bills. And we were struggling on continuing resolutions. And the shorter the continuing resolution, meaning that if they only do it for 6 weeks or 2 months or whatever, and they do that over and over and over again, there's never an allocation of funding. So you don't know how much money you have to work with. Unlike some of the other agencies of government that get their operational expenses as a percentage, perhaps, of the programs that they administer or grants that they administer or whatnot, FSA is not funded that way. And so we just get basically a blanket amount in the annual appropriations to cover our rent for our facilities and office space and our employees and paper and upgrading computers or whatever else we have, our basic office expenses. And during that period of time, there wasn't adequate funding. It was a huge reduction in funding. It coincided with a period of time when the average employee, over 50% of the employees at USDA and particularly FSA, and this is very true in Washington State, were over retirement age, and over 50% were anticipated to retire in the next 5 years. We were going through both of those. Decisions at the national level reduced the number of employees we were allowed to have on board. Other decisions based on lack of funding resulted in hiring freeze, early buyouts of employees, and for about a year and a half, we were at about 25% of staff.
A lot of people left, but then a lot of people came in. What was that about?
Obviously, a lot of people left, and they left because of national policies. The first thing they did was they allocated us, it's called ceiling, the number of employees that you can have per state. That's an allocation they make. And then that lifted the number up a little bit from the very low, but we had a lot of vacancies. We didn't have farm loan officers, people that could actually approve loans for farmers when they came in. We had many county offices that didn't have CEDs or program technicians. We were just kind of in a shambles, somewhat of a planned shambles from Washington State point of view, but it was a very, very painful period. And when they gave us the new ceiling, we were under that, so we had the ability to hire, and they lifted the hiring freeze. So then it was a matter of recruiting and hiring and training, because just because you hire someone doesn't mean they come into any position prepared to hit the ground running. And in the midst of all that, we had a new farm bill.
When you bring in new people, oftentimes you bring in a new atmosphere. Have you noticed that in you know, as the boss?
Oh, yes. We do have a lot of new young people. One has graduated and another one is soon to graduate, but we've got what we call county office trainees. They are the people that we train for about a year to become county executive directors who head up our county offices. Currently, we have 5 vacancies. We're advertising this week to fill 2 of them with our 2 recent graduates, or 1 graduated and 1 soon to graduate. But that's an unprecedented number of trainees for us to have on board at one time. Usually, it's 1 a year. That's kind of what our usual rate of people that retire or move on or choose to do something else. And here we've got 5, and they've been vacant for nearly a year, some of them. At the same time, we have 7 farm loan officer trainees. Again, that's unprecedented. That program takes about 2 years, and generally we have 1 every 2 years. When I came on board, that was just kind of the backfill rate, but we have had that's the area that we were depleted the most rapidly, was our farm loan staff with expertise in approving loans and helping farmers with their loans. that has taken us a long time to fill those positions. The good news was we actually got extra positions there, which was good, but they're all trainees. So most of the people that we have coming on board are young, enthusiastic, and we're really, really excited about them. And I have to say that our experienced staff have devoted a lot of time and energy and been very professional in providing the training for these new employees.
As someone who has been intimately involved with a number of farm bills over her career, I asked Olson whether she had any advice for wheat growers at the state and national level when it comes to the 2018 Farm Bill.
I don't think anybody has any advice right now. My crystal ball is not forecasting. Maybe in another 2 months, 3 months, that will become clearer. I think that there are a lot of folks involved in agriculture that are looking at this, trying to figure that out. One thing I would like to remind them is that the last Farm Bill was done during an unprecedented period of high prices across the board for all commodities. And that is a really hard time to do a farm bill because Congress really doesn't see a need for why they should have any kind of safety net programs for producers. Consequently, sometimes they don't get very engaged. On the other hand, I've seen lots of periods of low prices, really low prices, and that motivates everyone. And then you couple that with disastrous floods or droughts or fires, as we've seen in our state, and that seems to pique the interest a little bit more. So my advice is never give up. Think about good policies that are long-term rather than what one producer or one county or one group would benefit from this week. But think about what happens when those prices go up and what happens when they come down and what they mean to farm families and what they mean to the customers that we sell our crops to.
I remember 2014 as the first year the Farm Bill almost wasn't, with dramatic efforts in Congress to decouple farm payments from food assistance. I ask Olson whether she believes that battle will be revisited in Congress again.
I suspect it will always come up because I think there are always people that want to make that case, knowing full well, there's two camps here, knowing full well that then they wouldn't have to deal with the Farm Bill. And there are many people who really don't want to have a Farm Bill. An agricultural programs of any type. In fact, they would be just plain happy to get rid of the Department of Agriculture, and many of them have said so. On the other hand, I think anyone that really understands the breadth and depth of what USDA does, what it means to producers, what it means to consumers and children, what it means to the health and safety of every American and citizen around the world that eats the agricultural products that we use, realize how important the Department of Agriculture is, how important farm programs are to everyone involved, and the importance of linking the food systems and the food programs with agricultural programs for producers is a way to focus everyone's attention on the connection between the food we eat and eating and the food we grow as producers.
So you said at the beginning of this conversation that you got involved in the wheat industry because of the extremely low prices during the 1980s. Those prices are back again. Do you have any advice for farmers today to deal with these low prices?
No, the wisdom is the wisdom it's always been. Low prices cure low prices. The trick is to stay in business long enough to survive. But the other trick is that if you don't want to sacrifice the rest of your life, and I know my husband and I, we made that a conscious decision. Every farm family goes through that, I think, during really tough times. But you have to think about your priorities. And there is wisdom in knowing when it's time to get out, when it's not going to work for you or your kids or your family. That is a brutal decision for anyone to have to make. It's very, very sad. It's heart-wrenching. We had to make that decision multiple times. Obviously, maybe we guessed right. There were days that I'm not so sure we did, but at Looking back, I'm really glad of the decisions that we made, but I know that there are families making those decisions right now as we speak and will be in the coming year, and those are really hard decisions to make.
Yes, absolutely they are. Is there any chance that you might be getting re-involved with the wheat industry now that you have retired?
Well, I thought retired, that's what that meant. But I would never say never. I mean, I'm a fourth generation farmer, as most of your members know. I have been involved in agriculture my whole life. It's been a passion of my family. It still is. Our younger son is taking over the farm and managing it, doing very well. But it's hard to give up your passion. So if there was a valuable place to be, I might consider it. But I'm retiring. I'm looking forward to spending more time with my family, my grandkids in particular, and my husband, and not having to drive 70 miles every morning when it's icy.
Now that I'm not a reporter and don't have to be objective, may I say how lucky the wheat industry has been to have Olson in their corner the last 30 years. And it all started at a county meeting of the Washington Association of Wheat Growers. Olson stepped up and look where it led. Those things can still happen, something the young whippersnappers in my vast audience of listeners need to pay attention to. I know many of you have young families and numerous obligations in addition to just trying to survive, but joining a group like WAG is energizing. I go to board meetings and I see the energy when a group of smart men and women come together to talk about their profession. Come sit in the audience. Lunch is free. So, we've come to the end of another Wheat All About It. Hope you've enjoyed the show, and please like us on Facebook. The Washington Grain Commission, which sponsors this program, is made up of farmers, and farmers like results. Facebook likes are one way to tell them you appreciate their efforts to connect with their constituents by providing interesting and entertaining information about our wonderful wheat industry through a technology appropriate to the times. Until next time, I'm Scott Yates, hoping you'll listen to more Wheat All About It!
You think we're simple, you think we're not right. Look at your cities and ask yourself who's right. We've got country and you've got crime. We've got green and you've got grime. Let there be no doubt, we have what it takes to till the soil until our back aches. Just give us a break and don't be so rude. We love the work and you love the food.
We feed you.